The world is a safe and solid place, anchored to reality in safe and solid ways. But artists see things differently from the rest of us. And in the case of the celebrated New England painter Richard Upton Pickman, they see them very differently indeed. Pickman's Model by Howard Phillips Lovecraft.
You needn't think I'm crazy, Elliot. There's others with stranger prejudices than mine. Oh, go on. Laugh at Oliver's grandfather. He won't even ride in the car. If I don't like that damn subway, it's my own business. We got here faster in the taxi anyhow.
It's just that you seem more nervous than when I visited you last year, Uncle.
Well, you don't need to hold a clinic.
Your coach, gentlemen?
Yes. There's plenty of reason for my nerves, Elliot. I'm lucky to be sane at all.
You can talk to me, you know, Uncle Ned. We've always been more like friends than relatives, and if I've learned anything from that damn prep school, it's how to keep my trap shut.
Oh, yes, yes. I heard the official version of your little problem there. Well, if you ever feel like you need a father confessor, you can fill me in on the details. A fan dancer, wasn't she?
I don't want to talk about it. Not yet, anyhow. But you'll be the first to read the novel. Are these chairs all right?
Oh, of course, of course. Waiter, brandy and soda, please.
Yes, sir.
Elliot, that's you.
A very dry martini for me.
That's what comes of living in New York.
It's the best place in America for an aspiring young novelist. All the Ziegfeld girls, the theater, the flappers, Harlem, the village.
The flappers, and the flappers.
And the flappers.
Ah, youth. Well, maybe you ought to hear it. You were at least a nodding acquaintance of Pickman's. And you've been after me about it ever since I began to cut the art club and Pickman. Now that he's disappeared, I come round to the club once in a while, like today. But my nerves aren't what they were. But understand, I don't know what's become of Pickman. I don't like to guess. You probably surmised I had some inside information when I dropped him. That's why I don't want to think where he's gone. Let the police find out what they can. It won't be much. They don't even know about that old North End place he rented under the name of Peters. But then, I'm not sure I could find it again myself. Not that I'd ever try. Not even in broad daylight.
What? A North End place? Under a pseudonym? Or did he keep a mistress, or do you know?
No. Yes, I do. A mistress? Pickman? Yes, I know. Or I'm afraid I know why he maintained it. That's why I don't tell the police. They'd ask me to guide them. And I can't go back there. Couldn't, even if I knew the way.
Well, you've certainly got me thoroughly intrigued. If not for a lady friend, why did he keep a hideaway? Drugs? Unmentionable vice?
I'm coming to that. There was something there. And now I can't use the subway or go down into cellars ever again. Oh, go on, have your laugh. That's why I don't tell this to anyone, among other reasons.
I'm not laughing at you, Uncle Ned. It just seems a bit melodramatic. It's just that I always saw you as too sophisticated to be shocked, well, at art.
Art. You should understand me well enough to know I'd never have dropped Pickman for the same silly reasons fussy old women like Dr. Reed or Joe Minot or Rosworth did. Morbid art doesn't shock me. And when a man has the genius Pickman had, it's an honor to know him, no matter what direction his work takes. Boston's never had a greater painter than Richard Upton Pickman. On that, I've never swerved an inch, not even when he showed that ghoul feeding. That's when Minot cut him, remember?
Of course. The Back Bay Philistine.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, it takes profound art and insight into nature to turn out stuff like Pickman's. Any magazine cover hack can splash paint around wildly and call it a nightmare or a witch's Sabbath or a portrait of Satan himself. But only a great painter can make such a thing really scare or ring true. Only a real artist knows the actual anatomy of the terrible, the physiology of fear, the exact sort of lines and proportions that connect up with hereditary memories of fright, the color contrasts, the lighting to stir the dormant sense of strangeness. A Fuseli, a Goya can truly bring a shiver. while the weird tales cover merely makes us laugh. Doré had it, Blake had it, and Pickman had it as no man ever had it before. Or, I hope to God, ever will again.
Your drinks, gentlemen.
Oh, put it on my tab. And, for you.
Thank you, sir. You're very generous.
Just steer newcomers to some other corner. And freshen our drinks in a bit.
Yes, sir.
You know, in ordinary art, there's all the difference in the world between the vital, breathing things drawn from nature or models and the artificial truck commercial small fry reel off in a bare studio by rule. The really weird artist has a kind of vision which summons up scenes, models, from the spectral world he lives in. If I had seen what Pickman saw... No. I wouldn't be alive if I'd seen what that man saw. God... Time for a drink before we get any deeper here. You recall Pickman's forte was faces. I don't believe anybody since Goya could put such sheer hell into a twist of expression. And before Goya, you have to go back to whoever did the gargoyles for Notre Dame.
They believed all sorts of things back in the Middle Ages.
Maybe they saw all sorts of things, too.
It was a curious time.
I remember your asking Pickman once yourself, the year before you went off to Princeton, where in hell he got such ideas. Wasn't that a nasty laugh he gave?
What a young fool I was then. Every artist in every medium must hear that line 100 times a year.
Well, it was partly because of that laugh that Reed dropped him. He'd taken up comparative pathology and was full of pompous nonsense about the bioevolutionary significance of this or that mental or physical symptom. He said Pickman repelled him more and more each day. Even frightened him towards the last. He talked a lot about diet, said Pickman must be abnormal and eccentric to the last degree.
He wrote me that the fellow's features were developing in a way that wasn't human. I told him he'd let Pickman's paintings get on his nerves. He wrote me that you told him the same thing yourself.
So I did. But then I didn't drop Pickman for such conventional reasons. My admiration for him kept growing. Ghoul feeding was a tremendous achievement. As you know, the club wouldn't exhibit it, and the Museum of Fine Arts wouldn't accept it as a gift. Nobody would buy it. Pickman had it right in his house till he went. Now his father has it up in Salem. You know, Pickman comes from old Salem stock. A witch ancestor of his was hanged in 1692.
No, I didn't know. It's fascinating.
I hope I'm not boring you with all this aesthetic theory. I did promise you the inside story on Pickman.
No, not at all. But I still don't see... You were such an admirer. Why did you drop him?
Well, I got into the habit of calling on him quite often. His work had put the idea of a monograph on weird art into my head. He was a gold mine of ideas. He showed me all the paintings, drawings, pen and ink sketches he had about. Those would have got him kicked out of the club now. Before long, I was pretty nearly a devotee. And listened long hours, like a schoolboy, to art theories and philosophic explanations wild enough to qualify him for the Danvers Asylum. One evening, he hinted that if I were fairly close-mouthed and none too squeamish, he might show me something unusual.
You know, there are things that won't do for Newbury Street. They're out of place here. They can't be conceived here. Back Bay isn't Boston. It isn't anything yet. It's had no time to attract human ghosts. Ghosts of beings who have looked on hell and known the meaning of what they saw.
Wicked, wicked Richard.
The place for an artist to live is the North End. Any sincere aesthete would put up with the slums for the sake of the... spirits left from the days when people weren't afraid to live and feel and die. I can show you houses that have stood 2.5 centuries or more. Houses that have witnessed what would have made a modern house crumble into powder. You call the Salem witchcraft a delusion. But my great-grandmother, 4 times removed, could have told you things. They hanged her on Gallows Hill with Cotton Mather looking sanctimoniously on. I wish someone had sucked his blood in the night. I could show you a house he feared to enter, in spite of all his fine, bold talk. He knew things he didn't dare put in that stupid book, Wonders of the Invisible World. Did you know the whole North End once had a set of tunnels that connected certain houses with the burying ground? And, see, let them prosecute and persecute above ground. There were places below where voices laughed in the night. Why, man, out of 10 surviving houses built before 1700, I'll wager that in 8 I can show you some queer thing in the cellar. Bricked up arches, wells leading nowhere. There were witches and what their spells summoned. And pirates, and smugglers, and privateers. I tell you, people knew how to live, how to enlarge the bounds of life in the old time.
So, you haven't been digging around in the past for nothing.
Oh, so you're interested in this sort of thing?
Of course.
What have I told you? That I've got another studio up there, where I can catch the night spirit of antique horror and paint things I couldn't even think of in Newbury Street. Yes, I decided long ago one must paint terror as well as beauty from life. I did some exploring in places where I had reason to know terror lives.
Reed at the club thinks you're some sort of monster bound down the toboggan of reverse evolution. you said another studio?
It isn't so very far from the elevated as distance goes, but it's centuries away as the soul goes. The windows are boarded up, but I like that. I don't want daylight for what I do. I paint in the cellar. I think you'd enjoy the pictures. I've let myself go a bit there. If you're game, I'll take you there tonight.
Well, Elliot, there wasn't much for me to do after that harangue, but hail down the first vacant cab we saw. I didn't keep track of the cross streets. I can't tell you which one we turned up. When we did, we climbed through the oldest, dirtiest, most deserted alley I ever saw, with crumbled gables, broken windows, and archaic chimneys that stood half disintegrated against the moonlit sky. I don't believe there were 3 houses in sight that hadn't been standing in Cotton Mather's time. Pickman produced a flashlight and revealed an antediluvian 10-panel door that looked damnably worm-eaten. He ushered me into a barren hallway with worn dark oak paneling. He took me through a door on the left, lit an oil lamp, and told me to make myself at home.
Uncle, you're trembling. Here, let me fresh up your drink.
A silver flask?
With good Canadian whiskey. No moonshine rot gut.
Oh, that is good. Elliot, I'm what the man in the street would call hard-boiled. But what I saw on the walls of that room, they were his pictures, the ones he couldn't paint or even show in Back Bay. He was right to say he'd let himself go. Here, have another drink. Or at least I need one.
What were the paintings like, Uncle Ned?
The awful horror, the loathsomeness, came from simple touches beyond the power of words to classify. Nothing exotic, nothing unworldly. The backgrounds were mostly old churchyards, deep woods, cliffs by the sea, brick tunnels, ancient paneled rooms, or simply vaults of masonry. Copsill Burying Ground was a favorite scene. The madness, the monstrosity, lay in the figures in the foreground. They were seldom completely human, but often approached humanity in varying degree. Most of the bodies were roughly bipedal, but had a forward slumping, vaguely canine cast. The texture of their flesh was a kind of unpleasant rubberiness. Ugh. I can see them now. They were usually feeding. They were sometimes shown in groups in cemeteries in battle over their prey. The expression on the corpses' faces. Occasionally, these things were shown leaping through open windows at night or worrying at the throats of sleeping victims.
But don't get the idea that I'm like some 3-year-old kid frightened of the mere setting. It was the faces, Elliot. Those accursed faces that leered and slavered out of the canvas with the very breath of life. That nauseating wizard head waked the fires of hell in pigment. Give me that flask, Elliot. I began to see a hideous relationship in the face of the human and the non-human figures. He was establishing a gradation of morbidity between the frankly non-human and the degradedly human, a sardonic evolution. These dog things were developed from mortals. There was one piece called The Lesson. Can you fancy a squatting circle of nameless dog-like things in a boneyard, teaching a small human child how to feed? Some had exchanged their young with mankind, changelings. There was a picture of a Puritan family sitting about while the father read from scripture. Every face but one, showing nobility and reverence. But that one reflected the mockery of the pit. It was the kin of the unclean things. And in a spirit of supreme irony, Pickman had given the features a very perceptible resemblance to his own. He then asked if I would care to see his modern studies. I hadn't given him my opinions. I was speechless with fright and loathing. He felt highly complimented. I thought I'd just about recovered my wind and gotten used to those pictures, which turned colonial New England into a kind of annex of hell. But that next room forced a real scream out of me. This chamber brought horror right into our own daily life. God, how that man could paint! There was a study called Subway Accident, in which vile things clambered up from the floor at the Boylston Street subway station and were attacking the crowd of people on the platform. In another, things lurked behind furnaces and cellars, grinning as they waited for their first victim to descend the stairs. One disgusting canvas depicted a vast cross-section of Beacon Hill, with ant-like armies of mephitic monsters squeezing themselves through burrows that honeycombed the ground. There was a scene in an unknown vault where scores of beasts crowded about one who held a Boston guidebook he seemed to be reading aloud. He was pointing to a certain passage, and every face was so distorted with epileptic reverberant laughter, I almost thought I heard the echoes. The title of this picture was Holmes, Lowell, and Longfellow, Lie Buried in Mount Auburn.
I can see how that could be quite perturbing. How were you reacting to Pickman after all this horror show?
I saw his utter inhumanity, his callous cruelty clearly now. He must be an enemy of all mankind to take such glee in the torture and degradation of brain and flesh. The paintings terrified because of their very greatness. Their art was the art that convinced. We saw the demons themselves and feared them. The odd part was, Pickman got none of his power from bizarrerie. Nothing exaggerated. Details were almost painfully defined, and the faces, pandemonium itself. The man was not a fantasist at all. He coldly and sardonically reflected some stable, mechanistic, and well-established horror world which he saw full on. Whatever blasphemous shapes he glimpsed, whatever baffling source he drew on for his images, one thing was plain. Pickman was a realist.
What about his studio itself?
When we reached the bottom of a damp staircase, he shined his flashlight into a large open space with what was evidently a great well curbed by brick in the earthen floor. Must have been 5 feet across, with walls a foot thick extending about 6 inches above ground. Solid 17th century work. An aperture of the network of tunnels that used to undermine the hill, according to Pickman.
I use this camera here for background scenes. No use carting my outfit around town for this view or that view. A photograph's as good as the actual scene for sustained work. Here, let me show you this piece.
Oh, my God, man, even half finished, it's nauseating.
Come into my main studio here. I'll show you the piece de resistance, the culmination of a life's energy spent... Well, judge for yourself.
It's like being in Beelzebub's own picture gallery. Is this huge canvas the one?
That's the one.
Jesus God. Huh. I didn't know Earth could hold a dream like that. Elliot, it was a colossal, nameless blasphemy with glaring red eyes. In its bony claws, it held a thing that had been a man, gnawing at the head like a child nibbling a stick of candy. My God, the mold-caked body, the hooved feet, it glared and gnawed, gnawed and glared. It would take a glimpse into the netherworld, a suspension of nature's laws, to let a man paint a thing like that without a model. Tacked up to a vacant part of the canvas was a badly curled up photograph, I thought for a background which Pickman meant to paint. I reached out to uncurl and look at it when suddenly Pickman started as if he'd been shot. He'd been listening with peculiar intensity ever since my scream set off unaccustomed echoes in the dark cellar. Now he seemed frightened.
Shh!
What the hell was that?
For your life. Shut up!
My God, man. A revolver? He stepped out into the main cellar, gun in hand, shutting the door behind him.
Nya! Ria! Cthulhu Fatan! Nya! Ria! Cthulhu Fatan!
Damn rats. God knows why they eat the river. These tunnels touch the graveyards, but they must be running short. They want it out. Best not to yell down in these old places, though it draws things that are a positive asset by way of atmosphere and color.
Waiter! Waiter! Coffee here. Coffee for me and my nephew. Ah, well, Elliot, that was the end of my night's adventure.
Well, he promised to show you his place. I guess he did. But did you get home all right?
Oh, yes. Pickman led me out of that dark maze, past old tenements, streets full of cars with gangsters heading for the odd speakeasy, and churches open to the street, you know, the kind where you see bizarre scenes of unfamiliar religious rituals practiced nocturnally by strange families of immigrants. I recall a cacophony of church bells. Pickman left me at the corner of Joy. I never spoke to him again.
Your coffee, Mr. Thurber, and the young gentleman's.
Thanks. I'll have mine black.
Two lumps for me.
And for you, a little extra.
Well, thank you, sir.
But, Uncle Ned, I still don't quite understand precisely why you dropped him.
Richard Upton Pickman. Don't be impatient, Elliot. Pickman, the greatest artist I have ever known, and the foulest being. He wasn't strictly human, you know. Old Reed was right. He found a way to unlock the forbidden gate. It's all the same now, for he's gone into the darkness. Here, let's turn on this lamp. It's getting twilight out.
Was it those paintings in his studio then? Or the one that made you scream?
No. Paintings couldn't make me steer clear of subways and cellars. I'm a man of the world, after all. No. It was the photograph. I'd reached out to uncurl it just as the shots were fired, and had absentmindedly crumpled it into my pocket. I found it in my coat the next morning.
Well, can I see it, Uncle?
No. No. I burned it at once. You see, it wasn't a photo of any background after all. What it showed was simply the monstrous being he was painting on that awful canvas. It was the model he was using. The background was merely the wall of the cellar studio in minute detail. By God, Elliot, it was a photograph from life.
Pigman's Model was adapted by Burl Boykin and featured Doug Kay as Ned, Ross Mielke as Elliot, Burl Boykin as Richard Upton Pickman, Walter Reeves as the doorman and the waiter, and Julian P. Reed as the monster. Directed by Burl Boykin, engineering and soundscaping by Henry Howard. Pigman's Model is a joint project of the Centauri Express, the Atlanta Radio Theater Company, and Horror House.